You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to this Monday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. This show is a part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm one of the hosts of this show, Tony East, covering the Pacers for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. And with me, he had to come all the way to Indy to talk about the big news, Adam Friedman, my co-host. Adam, welcome back to the best city in the world.
I had to come back because Sabonis is mad. Angry, mad. Sorry, we're on the same mic, so I have to lean in to get a little picked up. That's a little quiet. But yeah, Sabonis is angry, and I got to be back for that.
Yeah. It seems like, since me and Jared Wade recorded, Sabonis has talked. So, of course, me and Adam have to do our takes on this whole stuff. So I got lucky enough to go to practice yesterday. I can go on Saturdays usually. Sabonis talking about the extension, lack of extension, the trade stuff. And, you know, obviously he's been prepped what to talk about. I don't want to... I don't want it to seem like this is like exactly how he's feeling, but it's what he said, and it's not great. So his exact quote was, "There's not really much to talk about. I know exactly how the Pacers feel about me now. They know how I feel about that. There's not much more to say. I'll let my agents do the rest of it. We'll see what happens." I think that now it carried a lot of weight when he said it, and it sounded out of his mouth exactly how I just said it. The fact that he said feel about me now, I think, means that it's like a new development that he realizes they feel a different way than he thought.
Well, and he just learned they offered him on the trade market, right? That was like the new news to him when he was speaking, or no?
Yeah, the trade thing is interesting, and I think that's a part of the timing. Part of the report is that, you know, Sam Amick's report saying that they've been offering him, I'll put air quotes around that, but to teams, and they're asking prices high, which makes sense. He's a good young player. But, you know, the fact that they're offering him, I wonder if that means, you know, this is old trade talks from a while ago, this is trade talks from right now, because one is way more insulting than the other, and if they really are far apart on extension negotiations, which the timing of that is weird, too, that they wouldn't figure it out until 2 days before the deadline, the fact that they would already be talking in trades just doesn't really add up to me. So I think it's a contract offer that's making him feel mad, but I don't know. I don't have enough information.
Well, you talked about on yesterday or this weekend's podcast that you did with Jared Wade that there are really only like two or three trades that make sense. Really one, but two or three ways you can be traded, right? So he can be traded for Jaylen Brown straight up, for like a Buddy Hield, which makes absolutely no sense. And there's another guy, right? That,
is anybody else? OG, kind of.
OG. So realistically, the trade rumors just make no sense. I mean, I guess maybe because Boston also hasn't signed Brown to an extension, so maybe there is something where both teams have just kind of had, hey, if we can't get to our deals, maybe we should flip guys, essentially. And that makes sense, I think, for honestly both teams. And if they were to do it, Pacers probably win that trade, theoretically, if they get to Brown. But anyways, the thing about this bonus, though, is it doesn't – I mean, not to be mean, but it doesn't really matter what he says and thinks. Right now, the Pacers hold all the leverage in the situation.
All of it.
They have him next on a contract. They can either extend him to a qualifying offer, which he has to accept – or he can get a contract offer from somebody else, which they can match. So literally, he will be on the Pacers at least the next 2 years, if not beyond that.
If they want him.
If they want him to be.
Right.
Now, he could be right. He could go out there next year and get a four-year, $120 million contract, a max deal. But if he gets that max deal, it's probably because he's worth it and showed it this year. So then you're the team you want to offer him to him anyways. So like at some point, I get what Sabonis is doing. He wants an extension before the season. He wants his money locked up in case he has a bad year because he's playing out of position. But he doesn't want to take the 4 for 72 because he feels like he's better than that. And he might be. He probably hasn't proven that yet, but I think after this year, he could prove he's worth 4 for 100 because I think we were talking about this before the show. Turner is definitely underpaid.
Yes. So comparing their contracts is not fair because Turner's underpaid. We all said that. We didn't like the timing of Turner's deal, but we liked the value of it.
Yeah.
Now we really like the value of it. And then, you know, Bobby Marks reporting at ESPN is that number, that 4 for 72, is a non-starter for Sabonis, which I think it's interesting. It's not even in the realm, but yeah, I mean, that makes sense. He's underpaid. Sabonis will also be underpaid, and Sabonis has another year to grow and prove he's better, which he thinks he is.
If Turner was a free agent last summer, he probably would have got 4 for 100 from somebody or close to it. And so there's no reason Sabonis should have to sign less money because Turner did. He shouldn't have to. I mean, that's just not how you get a contract based on your value, not based because somebody else took a deal or whatnot. So what I see right now is it's two sides just sort of stuck in their ways in a position where they're probably not going to get a deal done by Monday.
Nope.
They just aren't. They're just stuck. Sabonis wants 4 for, but say 100. The team says 4 for 80. They're not. They can't find a middle ground. Whatever it is, he'll play the year out, and he has no incentive, you know, The other part is he going to be mad all year? But if he plays bad this season, then it hurts his contract next summer. So he has no incentive to, like, play angry and be a bad teammate because then he won't get the big contract anyway. So to me, it's a play-it-out year. Hopefully, he'll play really well, and then he'll earn a four for whatever, $100 million or five for 110 if he's discounted.
And we both think he's going to play well, right? So I don't think that's an issue. Right. He's got some tough matchups we go on. We'll talk about that later. But, yeah, I agree with you there. There's really no incentive for him to be pouty. And this didn't get into the quotes because obviously what everybody cares about is his contract stuff, which is the only stuff that I tweeted. My cat just jumped on the counter, so I looked away. But I think the other part of this is, like, the first question he was asked about was, so Oladipo practiced, we'll talk about that later, a 5-on-5 yesterday, and Domas was, like, beaming and happy and excited. They're like, I loved playing with Vic, and we had the pick and rolls working, the ball's moving, and, like, smile on his face. And then at the end of his second quote, when someone else asked him about the business side of it, he said, trying to get ready for Detroit on a Wednesday. You know, he's clearly got the focus with the team where he needs to be. He just hates that the contract situation is what it is. I don't see him not playing as well because of this. Will it be a distraction? Maybe. You know, clearly we're already asking him about it and stuff right before the season starts, but I don't think it's going to affect his performance at all.
Yeah, because also after tomorrow's the 20th or 21st, whatever the last day is, he has to sign.
Today,
the 21st. He can't sign it anyway, so
right.
He won't be asked about it anymore because it doesn't matter. It becomes a moot point.
That's true.
So that won't, I mean, it might bother him that he doesn't have a deal done, but I mean, barring some crazy injury, he's going to get paid a good chunk of money next summer, whether it's $100 million or $60 million. Like, his floor is probably $60 million over 4 years at worst case. I mean, I think he's gonna get to $100 million probably by next summer. So it stinks for him. I mean, I think he wants a deal and wants it done, and I think as a player you want to have the long-term security, but at the end of the day it's all about the kind of leverage. The Pacers have the leverage in the situation because he's a rookie on a rookie deal and they own his rights for
You know what's funny, the way this is shaken out is this is why I was mad about the timing of Turner's last year, is because I said, if Turner is really this good, wait till next summer to pay him. And then they would have been paying him more than they are. So in my head, I always think waiting till a restricted free agency makes sense, because if they prove it, you just pay him how much they're worth. Who cares? So I think, you know, if Sabonis is really as good as he thinks he is and he proves it, great. Pay him. I don't care if he's a $25 million player. And like Jared said yesterday, this is such a good point. Like, Turner's underpaid. Oladipo's underpaid. Brogdon's probably amply paid. Warren's underpaid. Goga's clearly underpaid. He's on a rookie scale deal. All of their bench, basically, is on cheap deals.
They have
deals.
Pretty much an entire team. They have no player base money, $21 million in their playoff team, which is uncommon because they don't... Basically, that means they don't have a max player on the roster currently.
Exactly.
Which they will after... So Oladipo resigns probably at the end of next... or 2 years from now. But that's... I mean, it's how a small market team like the Pacers is able to be as good as they are, because they have been able to hit home runs on lots of these undervalued contracts.
Their cap sheet just is so good that if you're overpaying Sabonis a little bit, who cares? So, like, if you wait till next summer and that happens. That just is what it is. I don't think that's the end of the world.
Well, right, because you're saving, like, $7 million from Turner, real soon. I think Turner's probably a 22 or 25. So if you're paying, let's say Sabonis is the same as a 20.
Oh, Vic, you're saving $10 million. Yeah, he's a max player, right?
But, like if you were to alone. Say, I mean, the problem comes to... You're committing, let's say, like at the end of the day, almost like $45 million to your centers. That's a whole nother problem.
Right.
But
if he can play the four, he can play the four.
And he has a position next summer, too, where the Pacers have, if they lose him, don't have a way to replace him because they don't have the cap space, because they're going to be almost capped out going into next summer. They might have a little bit of room, but not enough to get a player of his caliber. So he has all this. I mean, if he goes out and gets a four for 20 or four for 100 offer, they're going to have to match it or just basically say we're willing to lose the asset, which it just is not
the way the Pacers operate.
And it doesn't make sense if you're running an NBA team that wants to
right.
be good and you're trying to prove to your superstar Oladipo that we're trying to win going into his final year of his deal. So it's a bad situation because it could hurt the team in terms of some morale and chemistry, but at the end of the day, it makes sense, honestly, for both. It's just go in the year, play the year out, basically on a prove-it contract, and if he proves it, you pay him. Kind of the way, I mean... It isn't football, right? Joe Flacco was that way. The ultimate prove-it player. He went into a year, he didn't sign an extension, and he got $26 million per year. Probably not worth it at the end of the day for the Ravens. But,
bad example,
but
Adam.
Whatever. But you know what I mean? It was a prove-it. If you're good, if you win Super Bowl or whatever, you're good enough, then you'll earn the contract, and we're happy to pay you. And hopefully the Pacers are saying that to him, that he knows at least that if he has a really good year, they're going to pay him. You know, if they're telling him, like, we don't know if you're worth it yet, but if you have a great year, we have no problem paying you, then at least he has that going for him.
Yeah, and I think something you said earlier is something I want to bring up. So today is the extension deadline. Like, you're listening, well, Sunday night, Monday, whatever. The extension deadline is Monday afternoon, 5 or 6 p.m. Eastern. I forget which one.
Yeah, we're trying to get this podcast up as fast as possible. Recording on Sunday at about noon because I don't tell you, he could probably just sign the extension tomorrow, 4 for 80.
And yeah.
This will all be useless I don't, anyways.
But I say that to say, A, because the deadline is so close, B, because the season is so close, C, because there's a lot of unlikely trades. I just don't see anything happening. I just think it's grainy now. That'll be it. By the end of tomorrow, the extension talks are over. There's no way he gets traded post-extension deadline to me right away. What the heck would be the point of that?
February, if your butt pops and you think you need a forward or whatever. But, yeah.
That's why the timing is so weird. It's like you're really pressuring this weekend, and I just don't see anything happening. I think what's going to happen is, like we've talked about, you know, the season will happen. We'll see how it goes. If things go horrible, then things go horrible. They can make a move then. But we've seen them play enough to know it's not horrible, and they have all the leverage still. The Pacers do. Sabonis knows he can get his money. They all have incentive to just work this out. So post-Monday, I think we'll have, you know, nothing will happen. We'll have the clarity to go forward, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I could see, and this is just because if it's a last-minute some kind of bargain, you know, thing, is that Jaylen Brown for Sabonis happens. It's been the kind of the rumor all summer. But the Celtics desperately need a center. They do. They don't have any.
They're
right.
Starting some Vincent Poirier or Enes Kanter.
And the Pacers could use any forwards. I mean, they have Warren, and I mean, who else? I'm thinking they got like
Leaf and
Holiday, right?
Yeah, they do not have McDermott. Yeah, they're not loaded on the. They're not loaded at forward.
So what I could see happening is that happens just the last minute. Is both teams say, well, we're willing to pay each guy $400 for $100. They make the trade and they both sign extensions. That's all in one move at, what do you use, 11:59 on today, I guess, 11:59 tonight. Or the other option is, I could see that happening at the trade deadline, where both guys have good years but not great years, and both teams see that they can get more out of the player in their system than they are in the current system. They do that. But it's also hard if both the Pacers and Celtics are, the, like, say, the 3 or 4 seed, competing for 3 through 6. You're not going to want to make a trade with a team that you're basically competing with to make the playoffs, so it's weird. If they were in different conferences, this trade might have already happened, to be honest. But them being kind of competitive in the same conference, I mean, I think those were on a higher level last year for sure. So it's just, I honestly hope he just goes in the year, probably won't have an extension, signs next summer some extension for probably in the 20s of some number.
Yep. Yeah, they'll offer him the qualifying offer, which I don't know if I how much I've ex- often
like
I've explained
six or seven,
this.
Right?
Yeah, it's a 1 year deal. I think his is like $9 or $8 million, whatever. But just offering that to me, he's a restricted free agent, right? So Sabonis can go. I think four teams next summer will have over 20 mil of cap space. Bobby Marks just tweeted this. I think it's
Dallas,
Atlanta. No. Atlanta, Memphis, Cleveland, and I forget the other one. Maybe it is Dallas, but
But Dallas has to sign some guys.
The Cavs are the only one of those teams. Oh, Toronto's
Toronto. No, but they lost it all because they
still have. I think they still have about 21. Yeah.
Okay.
So of those two teams, the Cavs and the Raptors are maybes there. But I mean, the Raptors, like I just said, only have 21. So it's really just the Cavs that
maybe the Hawks
are a team that
the
I can.
Hawks don't have a center.
With Collins and
that's true.
I don't know.
Memphis had Jaren Jackson, so they won't do it.
Right, exactly. So the Cavs are the only team in my head that I'm like, oh boy, they're going to offer him a ton, and the Pacers haven't, you know.
So there's a chance we could be in a Clint Capela situation next summer, where you have to pay him, where he doesn't have any leverage to get a good contract, but you have to pay him a good amount of money because he's a good player and you don't want to make him mad.
Right, say the Cavs get a different young guy. Now all of a sudden Sabonis is out of options, and then they're in the exact Capela situation.
Who's the best
I have no
college
idea.
Player? There's probably some center out there they could draft.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, if Caps weren't, it wasn't a cap restriction. The best trade would be a Kevin Love for Sabonis, but the cap doesn't work. I mean, you could sign to an extension and then make the move.
No, because the salary doesn't change this year with an extension, right? That's the trade.
Well, no, but you sign him to a $400 for $100
next
right now.
Year,
and then Love makes like 32, so you have to figure out some other. You throw McDermott to make it work, whatever. But that's probably not going to happen, so we shouldn't worry about that.
No, it's not. Well, so what's funny is I thought of Kevin Love as a guy. I don't want to do too many specific trades. We already pretty much named every guy, but I thought of Kevin Love right away, but remember Pritchard all summer, his thing with the current roster is, A, they're kind of young, and B, they're all in their prime or entering their prime. So, you know, he thinks they're going to peak pretty soon while they have this iteration of the team. Kevin Love is past his prime. Like, he just is. And it's not that he's not a good player. It makes sense. He plays the position of need. I don't want to belittle all of the Kevin Love things. I just think, given the way they preached about the way they built this current team, it doesn't make a ton of sense.
And to me, I think it feels like Sabonis is coming into a year as 14-12.
Yeah,
I think
16-12.
It depends once Oladipo comes back how the offense shakes out. But I think he's coming in for a year where he's going to have a huge like an Andre Drummond type double double year. And so I think Sabonis feels that too, and that's why he wants the extension now. He wants the security and says, "I'm going to be good. Each pick, I'm going to be good." And the Pacers are kind of like, well, when you're that good, then we'll pay you.
Right. Thing, so. You got anything else on this? I think we've kind of beaten it to death over two shows now.
No, but this means the most. It's the most interesting Pacer
it
news
is.
To happen this summer.
All summer. Two days before the season. Great.
And then we can go on to games.
Of course.
Hopefully.
We can go on to games. So one more segment of the summer, and then I think we're talking games for a long time. Goga debuted, and I haven't gotten to talk about it yet, which is super unfair. And Victor Oladipo did stuff that isn't just running around. So
he sang on competition support.
He did also do the thingamajig stuff. And Sabonis kind of admitted it, that it was Vic at practice, by the way. So we'll talk about all that. Vic 5-on-5 and Goga. And then at the end, we'll talk about previewing the games this week. So let's do that. So the big one, Victor Oladipo scrimmaging 30 minutes of 5-on-5 yesterday. That's not a ton of time, but that's more than the zero he was doing before. He said at practice he has been doing one-on-one, but 5-on-5 is a big step. He was really excited about it. And my favorite thing was, if you've seen the video, I think the Indy Star was who posted it. They asked McMillan how Vic looked, and he just said good, but like his facial expression said way more than the word good. You know, he really lit up, and it's one of those things that everyone said where, you know, the face says more than the words. And, it, you know, apparently he looked really good. He had a lot of fun, he said, playing with his new teammates. And it's just good to see him back on the court.
Yeah. Wow, I just dropped my phone and heard that noise. Sorry, guys. I was trying to look up some news. Yeah, I think there's, if you've read Zach Lowe or listen to Bill Simmons, there's been some concern out there that Oladipo's injury is going to be too hard to come back from. I mean, it's a unique injury that doesn't happen, and people don't know how players. Usually that's scary. The word when you say unique injury is always scary for an NBA player. So there's been a little bit of concern just out there in the NBA world that Vic will come back and not be as good as he was. Because really the last year and a half he played, he's been an all-star and one of the best, probably, 15 players in the league. He's been all-NBA level player. So I think it's encouraging that the McMillan and Sabonis and the people and other players on the team see it as, okay, he is at that level again. Because that's the Pacers' difference between being a borderline conference final team and being maybe a team out of the playoffs, is if he is not at that level. Because they've...
Someone asked him that. Someone said, Vic, do you think you'll be as good as you were before? He says, I think I'm going to be better. But his thing is always like, I'd rather show you than tell you and all this stuff. He said that again, you know. The Vic funny-isms that he does during these.
I do think it's good that he has his confidence, you know.
Right.
When a guy's that injured like that, you worry about, you know, are they going to be a little more scared through the court? And sometimes it takes a year to get over that. I mean, I think as a Pacers fan, we saw Paul George. It took him about a year to really get over his injury. Maybe even two, really, when Oklahoma City really got over it. So, but it seems like Vic has his confidence, and he realized it was sort of a fluke thing. And I think, honestly, he might be pain-free in that knee for the first time in maybe 3 or 4 years. And that might be the thing that's, like, great for him, he feels, is that he really feels like his... Because even his great 2017-18 season, his knee... He had missed 7 games with a knee injury.
Yep. Irrelevant.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. I think he missed 6, and he missed the last game.
That's
whatever.
Right.
It doesn't matter. And I think if he's pain-free, that might be great for him, because to be great, he has to be able to basically beat guys off the dribble. That's what he did so well, is you could ISO him out and he could beat anybody. I mean, he even beat LeBron to the rim in that playoff game that he got goaltended on. I mean, to do that is incredible. I mean, most players can't do that. So I think it's good to see that he is optimistic, that he is not like afraid of, you know, planting on the foot or the leg or the knee, I guess, and, you know, jumping after ball. Because, I mean, also it's the ability, you know, he hurt the play on a play he commonly makes where he kind of is running down the court, catching the ball and going up for a dunk. So I think that's encouraging overall. I don't know when he'll come back. It sounds like he's probably going to be out another month at least.
Yeah, probably the end of November.
Yeah.
So, at least the end of November. So don't never listen to me and Adam on injury return dates.
Yeah, we have no idea, to be honest. We're not doctors. But I guess the thing is, for me coming into the season, is the team built so much around him that when he's not there, they're going to struggle, or are they going to be able to ride the ship for the 6 weeks, let's say,
right.
6 to 8 weeks? Because I don't know, I think it'll show, but I'm kind of, I know you're getting excited about it, but TJ Warren, whew, you're hearing a lot of good things about him at practice, and whew, I do wonder if he's finally in a system where it makes sense whether he could be a 20-point-a-game guy for at least the first 8 weeks and be a borderline all-star player.
Yeah, well, I don't think he'll, like, I think his stats will reflect an all-star player, but his defense will not, you know.
Well, that's the old D'Angelo Russell thing.
Exactly. Russell. We just saw an all-star last year who had less than 20 points per game, I think.
Actually. No, he was at 20.
And was he? Okay. I can't remember. Oh, maybe that's what it was. That's right, because Caris LeVert was out all that time.
He had pretty much identical stats to Vic's 2017-18.
That's right. That's right.
Release.
Yeah, man, Warren is exciting. I got to pump the brakes because every Suns person is like, no, you idiots, he is not this good. But
I don't know.
He's exciting.
Suns are a terrible franchise. I have no idea how to coach players or turn players into anything. So
there are a lot of evidence of players getting better after
leaving. Is he going to become a borderline top 40 player. If that happens in this,
oh man, I don't know about that. I would love that, but I don't know if that's the case.
I mean, what was Russell on the rankings this year? Was he in the
30s, 40s range?
So let's say he makes that leap, which is probably very
very unlikely.
Unlikely. But if he made that kind of leap, the ceiling for this team goes up by another notch.
They'd have a first option who can actually get them buckets with Vic out, and a great second option when Vic is back, which would be fantastic.
And that's just a good small forward position. Yeah, when you force teams to guard their small forward, it changes the game because that's usually the best defender.
Warren's weird because there's so many questions with him. You know, you see these good stats, but is his shooting real? He's injured all the time.
There's a decent amount of games the past 3 years, right?
Yeah, and I know they held him out last year a little on purpose, but I don't know what to expect from him yet. I think the preseason and practice is good, but how's it going to look?
That's why the Pacers made I guess it was really a free bet on
the holiday. The holiday signing, I think, was a nice indication of okay, we're not sure, but we're pretty sure.
Yeah, and they saw a guy. I mean, this is what the Pacers have to do. Like we were talking before, they have to find undervalued contracts, right. And they were looking around the league, and they saw a guy they could get for basically nothing. And set the salary and thought, okay, this guy has got all the raw potential to be a good player. We just have to, if we can mold him into our system, he could be really good, and we could turn him from this good stats, bad team guy to maybe a good stats on a decent team guy.
Right. So in other news, we got Goga's debut.
Yeah, that's what I know you got to talk about that, so let's do it.
I had to. I was very excited to watch him play, so much so that I found a grainy Jumbotron stream to watch it because it was not on TV. A lot of pick and rolls were there in Holiday that were fun. And Sumner even too. He hit two threes. He had two dunks. He led the team in scoring. I know it's preseason, but it was against the Minnesota Starters. It's hard not to be encouraged by his first game.
He looks more like an NBA player than T.J. Leaf did when he first saw him play. That's what I'll
say. Yes, he does.
I mean, even Aaron Holiday, I think he looks like a more polished player than any of the past two rookies.
Well, I'm higher on Goga than both of them at draft time, so that's good that that's the case.
No, but I mean, for a 19 or 20, I guess he's 20 now.
I don't,
whatever,
yeah, 20,
for the guy
20,
who's
yeah.
that young to be just polished enough where he can, he made two threes, three dunks. Right? I mean, he just looks like a polished player, and it helps that he's probably played as a professional athlete for I don't know how many years now, but at least the last three or four probably. So it's an encouraging sign now. It's does he have the work ethic to be an NBA player? And if he does, he can put on the muscle. I mean, I don't know what the ceiling is, but right now the sky is the limit theoretically for him.
I'm excited to be way too into every single thing he does season long.
He's got some shooting touch that you just can't teach.
Consecutive threes. They were from the same spot. The first one was so funny. He was so nervous.
I mean,
the double pump was so funny.
I mean, how long did it take Turner to develop even a decent shooting form?
Yeah, two seasons. Right? He was in his second year before we saw it. I mean, he made threes his first year, but not to the level of the second year. You're like, oh, man, he can
shoot. He still has a weird shooting form at times, he feels he does. Right? I mean, it goes in, so I shouldn't be hating him. I mean, some of the best players have weird shooting forms. That's just, I mean, Steph Curry has the weirdest shooting form in the league.
Yes,
he's the best shooter. But Goga has just, some of that, it kind of reminded me a little bit of
Look at that pick and roll, man.
Does it reminded me a little bit of Marc Gasol.
I've got his highlights right in front of me. Marc Gasol is a fun one. I have trouble with comps because everybody, including myself, is stuck on foreign dudes because he's a foreign dude. Vucevic is the guy that I always come back to. Really like, because I don't think he'll ever get Gasol's level of passing.
And
right,
probably defense.
Right.
Too.
And he's a good defender. Yeah, I think he's a better defender than Vucevic, but I think Vuce is my comp right now for his play style in general. Although I do really like Vuce. He was an all star last year.
The thing I'll say is if you look at them, right, between Marc Gasol and Vuce, Goga is the size, right? Goga is significantly thinner right now. I mean, he's 20, so it's fine, but those guys have some they're big dudes. I mean, you put Gasol in the post, and it's hard to stop him, and it's hard to go through him if you're a guard.
So I think another thing with Goga that we saw is on defense, a lot of fouls. He had three, maybe four. He was guarding Cat, which is hard for anybody, including Turner and Sabonis or whoever. I mean,
yeah,
Cat scores on everybody.
Five offensive centers in the league.
Oh, yeah, one of the best two or three best offensive centers in basketball, probably. So that's a tough task, but the fouls were not always on Cat. They were on guards, too. So, like he said before the season, he's a step behind. I think it's good that he's going to contest these shots, even if he is behind, and I expect rookie defense from him. It will not be good, but he did encouraging things on that end, too. I'm glad I liked Goga. I did not like a center pick, but I'm glad I like Goga specifically.
Yeah, and I think the last thing I'll say is that for Kyle Kambich now, it's just about playing NBA minutes and developing.
Yeah, that's a big sign.
Because, I mean, that was Turner's biggest thing. Turner probably made the kind of early leap in his career because he got so many minutes, so much opportunity that he was able to figure out where he had to be to make the behind the person block, stuff like that. Turner was got really good at that pin against the glass block early in his career, and he figured that out. And so it's just about developing those reps so that he knows where if he misses a guy and a guy gets by him, he knows how to catch up back to him and block him or disrupt his shot and whatnot. So he's got it's going to take time, and he won't get as many minutes as Turner got his first rookie year. Turner played probably like 25 minutes a game for 60 games,
yep.
Crazy thing like that. So we'll see. I mean, I guess if he keeps showing in practice that he's really good, they'll have to make a decision at some point. But I mean, at worst case, he's probably going to play 15 minutes off the bench if he's really good.
Yeah. The other Tony Nerd thing the Pacers did. They signed and waived Stephon Hicks, Adam. Big stuff for the G League team.
I don't care.
I know no one does but me. They didn't even announce it. They just did it. Another G League Exhibit 10 guy.
You're probably the only one. If they did a press release,
I'm the only one who would say anything. Yeah, I know.
You're the only one who would send a tweet, oh, they did this.
Hey, they did it. They did it. Agnes is who I figured it out through. So.
Okay.
Yeah, they got Stephon Hicks back on the G League team. If you'll recall, he was on a 10-day on the real team last year, but he never played. So that's all the new stuff. Goga, Vic, and Stephon Hicks sneaks his way in there. Do we have anything else here? Are we ready to preview some real games?
Some real basketball.
Real basketball games.
What, 7 months removed from the last basketball game? Seven.
Six, seven, I forget.
Five months, maybe.
A lot of months. A lot of months.
Since early May.
All right, let's do it. All right, Wednesday, the official tip-off Pacers basketball in Bankers Life 2, which is always fun, against division opponents, the Detroit Pistons. They were way better than Detroit last year. They went all four. They went three. I can't remember. I think they won three.
They won three.
Two years ago, they lost three. Lance saved them from losing four. So the Pistons-Pacers matchups are weird, although 2 years ago, they never played with Blake. They played against Tobias Harris, noted Pacers
worse,
killer.
Actually, more of a killer.
Yeah. Last year, they played against Blake. If you'll recall, they had that game where he held the iPad and made the incredulous
face. That's right. I remember that
was a great one. So... they played better than this Pistons team last year. So usually when we do these game previews, we have a little bit of information about how the team is playing this year, of course, because the season's happening. But we don't for these first two. So we kind of just have to talk about what they did this summer and if they'll be better. And I think for the Pistons, they didn't do a lot, but I think Derrick Rose off the bench will help them. Tony Snell is a better wing than anyone they had last year. Markieff Morris helps them off the bench. So while they do have a lot of new guys, while they have a lot of injury-prone guys, at healthy, they're a little bit better than last year.
Yeah, if I know Blake played 75 games last year, so
that's not happening again.
No, but like Red Jackson missed a punch, right? Red Jackson
he did.
So if they're 100% healthy, they're probably a better team.
Yeah, they're Vic-less team that they're playing. Yeah.
No, I just meant a better team than their team last year.
Oh.
They won 39 games last year or something like that, 40 maybe?
They won 41. They made the playoffs. They were the 8 seed at 500.
Yeah, but
I don't even remember.
The 8 seed was under 500 team.
It usually is.
If everybody's – this whole year, I mean season-wise, if everybody's healthy for the Pistons, they're a better team than they were last year.
Yes.
Which also they're a playoff team. So I don't know. I mean, the Heat are going to be better this year, so that could be the team to replace them and whatnot. Bowls, people think
health is their whole thing. Like, if Blake gets hurt, they're just not good anymore. Yeah. They're just bad. He was so good last year.
He's making $35 million a year, though.
He's a stud. All NBA level player. I mean, they need that guy because Reggie Jackson's not living up to his money. So I think their starting five is better, right? They'll have Reggie Jackson, Blake, and Drummond for sure. Those are all pretty good players.
So, right, Blake's the best player on the court.
Easily. Drummond's the best rebounder on the court.
Watch out for Sabonis.
And Drummond Turner is always a fun matchup to me because Turner pulls him away from the rim. Turner actually does a pretty good job getting shots away, but on the other end, Turner gets destroyed in the glass.
So I do wonder if we're going to see a flip on both ends of the floor here.
Ooh,
where we see
Turner
Blake
on Blake.
Well, first I think we're going to see Drummond on Sabonis. I do too. That would make sense. I think it makes more sense to put Sabonis on Drummond too.
I think so too. All right.
I think we're gonna see our first flip.
First flippy.
And honestly, we'll see happens this game because they're playing again Monday.
I don't know. They might keep Turner on Drummond to keep him around the rim. I'm not sure. That'll be interesting.
But you want somebody out there guarding Blake on the perimeter, don't you? I mean,
yeah, that's
their best defender for the size.
So me and Adam were talking about this Pistons Cavs week one. So Kevin Love and Blake, if those guys are playing the four, that's like the biggest rip the band-aid off for Sabonis perimeter defense you could possibly have.
I guess the problem is though, if Sabonis is gonna just be roaming around, they probably won't put Drummond on. Sabonis will destroy him.
Right.
If he pulls him away from the rim.
Right. I think they'll try to. Maybe they'll put Sabonis on him just for rebounding battle purposes. We'll see.
They should win the matchups because I think Turner Sabonis as a combination probably come close to Drummond and Griffin as a combination in total.
Yeah, it's close. I think the Pistons two are a little bit better.
Yeah, the Pistons have a better point guard. I think Brogdon's better than
Reggie Jackson. The other two starters for Detroit, I'm pretty sure, I'm almost positive, will be Bruce Brown and Tony Snell.
Which I think Lamb and Warner are about the same, if being a little better.
Well, yeah, Brown is young and he's a good defender, but he's really bad on offense.
Well, I guess it depends what kind of Warner and Lamb we're getting. We've never seen them play with the Pacers, so.
I gotta say, kind of his new opening thing. Night, Tony Snell versus Anthony Tony, TJ Warren, Tony versus Tony, and opening night is exciting for me. So where the Pistons get dicey is their bench, right? Kennard can score, but never shows anything on defense. Thonmaker, whole career, never shown anything. Whoever else they even play, Christian Wood, their new rookie, Sekou Doumbouya. Pretty much everything on their bench is Markieff Morris and Derrick Rose. And they're good players, but that's their whole bench, right? Yeah. So if the Pacers bench, which is also young and unproven, can make their mark, they have a good chance of keeping up.
So we've got to tell people we do this thing, and it's been a tradition now for 2 years. We do a butcher and an X factor. So a butcher from the opposing team and X factor the Pacers. So,
but we have to pick a different guy.
Yeah, so
we can discuss.
So who's your butcher?
Now you can do well. We both know who it's supposed to be, right?
Yes, but I'll pick the opposite of what I'll pick somebody else.
You get the easy one for the Cavs game.
Okay, so you take.
Yeah, Blake's the butcher, right? Blake, yes. All NBA player last year, 25 insane stats, right? 25 and something and something. I don't even remember. It's just nuts. You know, he can shoot the three now. He can back guys down. He can pass a little from the elbows. Like, he's just a stud. His defense is. You know, average, not great, but it's average. Like, that's a massively positive player. He is either going to be, you know, pulling Turner away from the basket or being able to, you know, bang with Sabonis if they have Sabonis on him. I'm intrigued by who they choose there. You know, he's going to have his way. He's a really good player, and I do not see a situation in which they contain him very well.
So the guy I have is obviously going to be Andre Drummond.
Yep, that's who.
So I don't think he's...
Man, what did Drummond average against the Pacers?
Well, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure he's going to put up a 15 and 15 line. Now he might go 8 of 24 or something, you know, something like that, but he's going to put up a big number at the end of the day.
Yeah, he is a massively good rebounder, and against Turner specifically, where that doesn't go. So last year against the Pacers, he had 19, 17, 16, and 12 rebounds.
28 and 19.
Yeah, he was a beast.
But they lost that game. They lost that game. They lost by 20.
He had a 28 and 19 game, and they lost by 19 points. Yeah, yikes. The 37-point loss, he had 12 and 12. That's so funny.
That's still like a...
Yeah, so he had a 26-16. Yeah, he usually plays very well against the Pacers. Turner cannot get him on the glass. Turner does pull him away from the rim, hit the threes. I think Turner's shooting is good against the Pistons every year, but Drummond always owns him on the glass. So the Pistons will get more possessions likely. We'll have to see how that goes. Yeah, I think that this will be an interesting one. It's really hard to project how the teams are going to play. It's opening night. So
who do you think is going to win since we do this?
The home team. I would have picked the home team if the Pistons were the home team too, but the Pacers are home, so I'm going to take them in a close one.
Oh, we didn't do X Factor too.
Oh,
real quick. I'll do my X Factor.
Yeah,
first.
You get to go.
So
first.
I think my X Factor is going to be Brogdon. He's got.
I think someone else.
Reggie Jackson's going to be kind of, if he can provide the defense on Jackson to pressure him to not basically get the ball to the Griffin and to Drummond, that could be key. And on the other side, I think Brogdon could be in for a nice day exposing Jackson as not a great defender.
I was trying to think of a bench player because, like I said, I think the Pistons bench is pretty weak. So the bench player who, you know, could swing the game the most, I'm going Aaron Holiday here.
That's a good one too.
If he, you know, if he has one of his good Aaron Holiday games, 15 points on good shooting, he's distributing a little bit, I think the bench will look really good on offense, and they can, you know, get ahead of the Pistons bench, whereas if he's not shooting as well or if he comes in ready to shoot, they might be a little less inclined to be beating the Pistons bench.
So this is the third year in a row they start their first game at home. I think.
Yep.
Amazing.
Memphis,
or
no, the Nets 2 years ago, and Memphis last year. Yep.
So, I mean, This could be we'll do our, probably we did last year, our overhype and prediction game one. But they could be in
for, they're really, so good.
They could be in for a really good home game where like Warren goes off for 30. And
remember 2 years ago when they scored 140 opening?
Yeah,
night?
And then they completely slipped the offense by about what, mid December. It was all of a sudden they're back.
How ridiculous.
We thought they were gonna like just run the ball like constantly on pace, and
they were like the 25th pace team.
And they slowed it down because they got their defense to work. They slowed the ball down.
Game two. Saturday on the road against who Tony thinks is going to be the worst team in the NBA this year. Worse than the Suns, worse than the Hornets, the Cleveland Cavaliers. I know, the Hornets are really bad. The Cleveland Cavaliers stink. I'm glad the Pacers get to play them four times. They'll get to bank in some nice wins against this
team.
Well,
they lost them last year one time. Remember that?
They
Larry
did.
Nance.
Larry Nance cheated. Larry Nance cheated. And, oh my gosh, it was so blatant too. It was ridiculous. I know the refs were probably watching the ball at the buzzer, but the Cavs summer was really just getting a bunch of young guys. They drafted Indian native Dylan Windler. They also got Darius Garland and Kevin Porter, three first-round picks. They added a bunch of youth basically everywhere. I don't think they signed like anybody, did they?
God, Kevin Porter was born in 2000. Holy crap.
Yeah, young guy.
He's
Kevin
probably the youngest
Porter.
Guy in the league right now.
He's over 5 years younger than me. That is crazy.
So I was born, he's born May 4th. I was born May 5th. He's 3 years younger than me, almost.
Wow.
That's sad.
Wow, that is crazy. Yeah, they didn't sign a single player, did they?
They were.
That's interesting.
They got their championship. And they got all the money.
And now they're going the other way.
Now they're trying to get the lowest amount of salaries possible, and they're going to bank in all the extra TV money, and they're going to just be bad.
So their new stuff, right, is a healthy Brandon Knight, who knows? That guy's not been healthy in 3 years, how good he'll be. They have a healthy John Henson and Tristan Thompson, and they don't have J.R. Smith, Pacers killer anymore.
Who's their coach?
Their coach is John Beilein, Michigan. That's right. Michigan John Beilein. That's a great guy for a developing team. I don't know how good of a winning coach he'll be, but I think for where their team is, that's a great
first
coach.
First year, right?
Oh yeah.
They can go
no expectations 15 at all.
15 and what 67, and it's okay.
Yeah, no, I actually think the Cavs are headed in a good direction, but they're going to be horrible this year. So
I think I got that Love contract off the books. Actually, yes. Once that's off, they'll
figure out how to trade him at some point. I'm sure Zach Lowe, I think, astutely agrees with me that Portland is the move there. But we're not talking about the Cavs. Basketball is going to happen, and they're either starting Jordan Clarkson, Brandon Knight, or Darius Garland at shooting guard. All three of those players are not very good. And their wings is going to be Chetty Osman, who could be good, but is kind of unproven. He was actually pretty good for the last half last year. Outside of Kevin Love, really, they have a bunch of young, unproven guys, so it's hard to see them having a substantial advantage in any non-Kevin Love area of the game.
So I get to pick first. I'm going to pick Kevin Love as the butcher.
Dang. What a hard pick.
I think he'll be the only guy to score over 20 points for this team, probably, and that would be that.
Yeah, Tristan Thompson sometimes has good rebounding games against the Pacers, but he didn't play in their last preseason game. I don't know his health status, if he does or does not play. Or if Kevin Love's at center, what the deal is. But, yeah, they just don't have anyone who really, outside of Love, is like, you're like, oh, we have to adjust the game plan to contain him in X or Y way. I think Sexton is actually a solid player, but not a good player. So I think he's the guy, right? If his three-point ball is as good as it was last year, he's hard to guard. He can create for himself and others. But remains to be seen. You know, year two is a big year for guys like him, and I don't want to put expectations too high for year two guys who – often don't prove it, so we'll see.
So
but
he's
I think
in year three, isn't he?
He's in year two. He was a rookie last year. Yeah,
was he?
Yeah, wow. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, I'm off a year. And I know. Wow. Okay. Anyways, who's
but,
your expectation?
But yeah, they're just a bad team. where do they have an advantage anywhere outside of Kevin Love that you're fearful
I'm not even
for,
sure
especially
advantage.
If Thompson isn't even playing. Right, exactly. Exactly. My X factor is, let's see.
I've got mine.
Let's go TJ Warren here.
Damn it.
Did I take yours? Yeah. I think this is a good game for him to really get his scoring going right. They have no one who can cover him.
Could be a 35-point warning game.
It could. You know, yeah, if Thompson can and Thompson's not a bad defender, if he can anchor the paint a little bit and Love can do some D on Sabonis, I think Warren's going to have to score, and I think he can. So we'll see if Chetty Osman can guard him.
So the other one I had, I had Warren too. The other guy I had, I think this is the Sabonis-Turner matchup. You said it the first game. I mean, that's the Sabonis-Turner thing, pairing is one
right.
kind of thing, X-factor, because...
That's fine.
This will be another test of it. If they're playing Thompson...
Two bigs, man.
If they're playing Thompson and Love, which we don't know what they are, but if they are, they have to figure out how to make that work. Could we get any flip both Turner and Sabonis to guard other people? On the other end, if it's just Love playing center, this could be a really good game for Sabonis, because I'm not sure they have any even stretch four.
Right. Could
be on the court, and Sabonis might just be...
Yeah, their best stretch four might be Larry Nance.
I mean, Sabonis might have 25 points.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, we could have multiple 20-point
He killed the Cavs last year, too, yeah.
He scored 115 in this game, 115 is like 75.
They totally could. The biggest X factor in this whole game, Adam, is make sure no one gets hurt by Matthew Dellavedova and his silliness.
I think that's the biggest X factor of the whole year now. Nobody else get hurt.
Nobody else get hurt. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. I think we've named every player on the roster now that could have an impact. Because Deli's in their rotation, actually. That says a lot about the Cavs.
Yeah, well,
they are not.
I don't know who the best college player is, but they're tanking for that person.
Yeah, the best college player is Cole Anthony. He is awesome.
Okay, so tank for Cole.
Well, what you want, right, for the Cavs to get the center, this guy James Wiseman on Memphis is
pretty
high. Oh, that's
right. Wiseman is amazing.
And he's really good. So you want, but he's not going to be the number one pick. So I think what you want is the Cavs to get, like, the fourth pick. Because then they'll pick Wiseman and then Sabonis.
Is Wiseman really good, though?
Wiseman could be number one. A lot of really hardcore draft guys don't like him, but the Draft Express guys do, so we'll see.
Yeah, I should know that I live in Memphis.
You do.
That people have been hyping up forever.
Yeah, man, he's supposed to be awesome. I don't know much about him. But he's a lefty, and I know he's getting a lot of Chris Bosh comps just because he's a lefty.
Later.
Yeah, you should.
Bang on my coffee, though.
All right, that's it for the first game previews. We're here. The regular season is here. Hope you guys are just excited as we are.
Yeah, we're skipping football 5 minutes this week because before the Colts game, we'll do one next week. Don't worry about it.
So later this week, obviously, today's Monday. So tomorrow's going to be our last day off until probably Thanksgiving time. So if you want our 5 shows this week will be me and Jared from yesterday. Go listen to that. It's all Sabonis all the way through this one. And then Wednesday, we'll have a Pistons guy on to talk Pistons. Thursday, we'll, of course, talk about the opening night and what we learned. We'll both be there for that. It'll be great. Friday, probably Chris Manning, but we'll see. Someone will talk Cavs, and that'll be a fun week. We'll get a lot to to talk about a lot of basketball, and we'll see you guys next week. Adam, you got anything else today?
No, I'm excited for the season. About
me
about
too.
Damn time.
About damn, yeah, I don't have to talk about preseason games like they matter anymore.
Or some August discussion about who the hell knows what.
Yeah, no kidding. Thank you guys for sticking with us all summer. I'm really excited for the season. I hope you are too, and we will see you guys on opening night.